listening to Living with ADHD and CPTSD, available on Apple and wherever you get your podcasts. Episode of Living with ADHD and CPTSD. Today we have a CPTSD episode, of course, and today's topic will be dysregulation or brain dysregulation or emotional dysregulation. Basically, it is dysregulation. So dysregulation refers to the inability to regulate your brain function and nervous system, which has physical and mental and emotional symptoms. And we always seem to be engaged in a fight or flight mode and are extra sensitive to stress and other triggers. So I have that problem, and a lot of times it does lead me to dissociation, which unfortunately can be more prone to being triggered and having a child part active and online. So I'm going to discuss, I got a few articles that I'm going to read, discuss my own personal experiences, and also some stuff that I've written down that I got from a video that I found to be very informative about dysregulation. Okay, here we go. CPTSD and brain dysregulation, what it is and what it feels like. This is from a point of view of a person that's talking. I grew up knowing I wasn't normal. I knew something was wrong with me, and I had to keep part of me hidden from others. The part of me that was crazy. It was this part of me that drove me to find answers and eventually led to my diagnosis of CPTSD. I was a calm, empathetic, level-headed wife, mother, friend, and teacher, except when I lost my mind. When that happened, I seemed to lose all control over my emotions, thoughts, and actions, and it always ended in shame and regret. I had no real explanation for this dichotomy, except my assumption that I was crazy or my brain was broken. Although I had suffered from depression all my life, I spiraled into a deep depression several years ago after a series of life changes. And it brought this part of myself into full view of everyone I had been trying to hide it from. I felt like a monster and isolated myself, which only made my depression worse. I knew I had to figure out what was happening to me. Dysregulation refers to the inability to regulate your brain function and nervous system, which has physical, mental, and emotional symptoms. With CPTSD, our history of trauma can leave our nervous system always engaged in fight or flight, and we become extra sensitive to stress and other triggers. These are just some of the more common signs of dysregulation. Survivors may have any combination of these at different times. Our dysregulated state may last a few hours or even a few days. So, dissociation or feeling mentally checked out, lost time, can't remember what you've been doing, inability to remember words or becoming lost in familiar places, numbness in extremities or other parts of your body, intense emotions such as frustration, shame, or anger, which may not reflect the current situation, becoming physically clumsy or uncoordinated, rapid or erratic heart rate and breathing, can't concentrate on a task, starting many things but unable to make progress or complete them, obsessive thoughts and rumination about something upsetting, an intense drive to act to fix the situation or feel safe. For CPTSD survivors, dysregulation is generally caused by a trigger. This can be a seemingly ordinary or mild event, but it triggers an unconscious flashback to the feelings of past traumatic or emotionally upsetting experience. These triggers can be very individual, but some common triggers include abandonment, feeling overwhelmed, being left out or ignored, being in large groups, making mistakes, sex, loud noise, and physical pain. While the signs of dysregulation are distressing, the consequences can be devastating. Every survivor I have spoken with has experienced the horror of coming to terms with how they acted during a dysregulated state, usually more than a few times. It's not uncommon for dysregulation to cause the loss of friendships, relationships, or even jobs. For me, it feels like someone has taken over my brain. I am present and I know what I'm doing, but what feels normal or reasonable at the time looks crazy or out of control to others witnessing the dysregulation. And in retrospect, I would see it that way too. I have invasive thoughts, usually telling me how much people dislike me or some story about their true motives and intentions. I get defensive, like I'm being attacked or ganged up on, even when that's not the case. I have the urge to show people how angry or hurt I am, and hurtful words come flying out of my mouth with little or no control. I rage and yell, or lash out at people in texts and emails. At the time, it feels like a relief to get the words out of my brain. But later, I am forced to deal with the consequences of hurting people, usually the ones I love the most. Many times my anger and rage would be directed at myself. I often had thoughts of self-harm and suicidal ideations, but even more common was a need to punish myself through self-sabotage, usually through binge eating and smoking. I also feel an intense need to isolate myself. The narrative running through my head is convincing me no one wants to be around me anyway, and makes me feel suspicious of others. So I push away the people I love in a vain attempt to feel protected. If I can't physically isolate myself, I sometimes shut down and become flat or even dissociate. When I first came across the concept of dysregulation, it was an epiphany. Suddenly, there was an explanation for what I had been ashamed of for so many years. I wasn't alone, and there was help. The first thing I had to do was recognize when I was in that state, so I could address it before any damage was done. Then I could go back and learn about what triggered it. It's an ongoing process, and even after almost a year of doing this, I can still be surprised as my symptoms get more and more subtle. What helped me the most was understanding the correlation between the physical process happening in my brain and nervous system and the thoughts and emotions I was having. Realizing my nervous system was interpreting my triggers as danger, and I was mentally responding to this impending danger, even if it didn't really exist or was being overblown. And the biggest gift I could give myself when I am dysregulated was time. In the past, I knew these moments would pass eventually, but the intense urge to act on my feelings would push me to respond. Once I understood the process of what was happening, I could sit with my feelings or even reach out for help, knowing once I was re-regulated, I would be able to interpret things with a clear head. To mitigate the intensity of the feelings and help myself re-regulate faster, I found many useful strategies. Most of these involve some sort of physical activity that will help re-regulate the nervous system. Some examples: bilateral stimulation. Redirect your nervous energy by activating both sides of your brain. For example, passing an object from one hand to another, stomping your feet alternately, follow a swinging object back and forth with your eyes, or going for a walk. Deep breathing. Sit or stand up with your spine straight and inhale through your nose and into your belly as deep as you can. Then exhale slowly through your nose, taking just a few seconds longer than your inhale. Repeat as many times as you need. Singing, humming, or gargling. The vagus nerve is the main component of the parasympathetic nervous system and is responsible for many bodily functions, including heart rate, respiratory rate, and control of our mood. It runs from the brain through the muscles of the back of your throat and vocal cords to the heart, lungs, and digestive system. When we activate these throat muscles, it stimulates the vagus nerve and seems to stabilize electrical activity in the brain. Yoga, meditation, cold showers or splashing cold water on your face. Massage and movements are other ways you can stimulate the vagus nerve. Relief came for me by experimenting with these and other techniques at different times. Unfortunately, there is no magic bullet for me. Each episode seems to respond differently at different times. But I have a toolbox now, and I can take control of my triggers and reactions, and I don't feel so crazy anymore. Okay, so there's that article. And it is definitely a true type of story. It isn't, I guess you could say, like a psychological explanation of it, but this is definitely a point of view from a woman who deals with triggers and trauma. So there are 5 types of dysregulation that is linked to CPTSD. I'm going to read this article, and it's pretty simple. The 5 types of dysregulation we may experience if we have developed as a result of CPTSD. Emotional dysregulation. We may have very volatile emotions that are so powerful we can feel controlled and overtaken by them. We may experience particularly intense and fluctuating emotions in response to our relationships with others, particularly our closest relationships. Also, we may have difficulty identifying what exactly we are feeling. Example, find it hard to name some emotions we experience, and have problems expressing and experiencing some emotions. 2, interpersonal dysregulation. This means we might experience significant difficulties both forming and maintaining relationships with others. We may, too, constantly fear rejection and abandonment, leading us to become needy and clingy, with which, most sadly, can often cause the very rejection we are trying so ardently to prevent. We may, too, find our feelings for others often vacillate dramatically from idealization one minute to demonization the next, possibly apropos. Very little. 3. Cognitive dysregulation. This type of dysregulation may lead us to experience dissociation, depersonalization, and paranoia. 4. Behavioral dysregulation. Our behavior may become extremely self-destructive. We may self-harm, attempt suicide, have promiscuous and unsafe sex, take unnecessary risks such as reckless driving, become addicted to drugs and or alcohol in a desperate attempt to numb and temporarily escape from overwhelming mental anguish, or develop eating disorders. And 5, self-dysregulation. We may feel confused as to who we are and have a very poor sense of identity. We may feel different aspects of our personality are not well integrated, so we can find ourselves acting in rather one-dimensional ways. Our self-image can be unstable, as can our values. We may be confused as to who we really are and what our beliefs and principles are. Indeed, these may frequently alter. They can leave us feeling lonely and empty. All right, so there's your types of dysregulation that are out there. Okay. We're going to take a quick break, and then when I come back, I will talk about my own experiences with dysregulation and some information that I found on a video that it discusses it further and gives hopefully another insight as to what's going on and some helpful advice as to how you can, you know, help manage it and reduce the dysregulation symptoms. Okay, everybody, talk to you soon. With dysregulation are pretty simple. I often, when there's a trigger or when I'm feeling like there's a threat or I am afraid of something that's happening in the moment, I often tend to dissociate, because it's like a way of helping myself from experiencing the emotional pain and the, or try to avoid the trauma that can occur. And the only problem is that it would often lead to me getting into trouble or upsetting my partner in a way that would cause me to like suddenly snap out of it and act in a different way. So it would be like an alarm going off and going, oh crap. I would struggle, or I would like suddenly get all like panicky and lose control and just be like really emotional, and my volume would rise and my tone would change in my voice, and I would go from a monotone style voice into a more emotional and empathetic response. But it would take an extreme situation for that to occur, and that was the big problem. And I, of course, was always trying to find a reason or an explanation as to why this was happening. And turns out that I was dysregulating. So I was looking up some information a little while ago about dysregulation and trying to find out if it has, you know, exactly how it intertwines with CPTSD. And this is the information that I got from a video on YouTube. So with dysregulation, there is the onset of flooding. It's a range of emotions, an explosion or flood of rage or shame, checking out emotionally or socially. So the checking out emotionally or socially is like shutting down, not being able to look at the person, minimal words, very basic things you're saying, no emotion. No, so like very monotone, very like basically emotionless kind of responses and kind of talking. So instead of doing something like saying to my partner, oh, I'm sorry, sweetie, I really didn't mean to say that. I apologize. That was definitely hurtful. And I know I shouldn't have said that. What would happen is I would become like almost like robotic. So it would be very, very monotonic talking. So here's like an example. I'd be sitting there and I wouldn't even be looking at her. So I'd be looking like staring off in the distance and sitting there going, yeah, you're right. I know I should have done that. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hurt you. That was bad. And then I would like glance at her, and the response from that I would receive would be like, that's not very genuine. It doesn't sound empathetic. It doesn't sound right. And it would be like a disbelief, right? Like I'd be like, I'm not aware of it. And like my lack of awareness really shows there. I wasn't even aware that, like, I thought I was doing it right, or I was showing like an emotional response with empathy, and it wasn't. So again, the flooding is often followed by dissociation. So yeah, like I would start dissociating even before something like that would occur. And I would be like looking off in the distance, no eye contact, having a hard time listening to her, losing like a lot of things. Like here's the thing. So I would lose like my train of thought, or lose the ability to find the right words, could feel clumsy or panicked or lost or even numb. And then in the dysregulated state, it is very easy to miss danger signals or emotionally overreact. So to make like grave social mistakes, like I was saying in that, at that other article that I read, the person would get extremely emotional or very angry suddenly, and could say or do things that at a later point they would completely regret. They'd end up regretting what they did because it was hurtful, it was inappropriate, it could even, if it was serious enough, could lead to getting like let go from your job, or maybe even criminal charges, like if you're that, if that's, if it gets to that point. But when it comes to social mistakes, there are some times where I make responses or reactions, or I say things that can sound childish. So there'd be childish responses coming out of my mouth. And I didn't necessarily know in the moment that I was doing it. If you know, if you see what I mean, it would be something that happens, like the realization of what I've done and understanding of how stupid or childish it sounded coming out of my mouth would not occur till shortly after, when I've calmed myself down and I've been able to regroup. And the thing is it's not excusable. Like, you think, if you sit there and you fall back on an excuse like, oh, that was, I was triggered, my child part was online, it wasn't me, the adult, I didn't mean to do that, you know I don't mean to do these kind of things, it would get to the point where that kind of stuff didn't matter anymore. You have to take responsibility and take ownership for what you do. Doesn't matter if you're completely the adult and you're properly regulated, or if you are in a dysregulated state and you're triggered and you're feeling your child parts active and they're talking for you on your behalf, you have to take ownership for that. So a lot of times you can, like I said, you can emotionally overreact and make mistakes that you'll regret. So it can be really difficult when you're in a dysregulated state to pay attention, to remember, to communicate, or to learn. So I learned there is a method that could be helpful for a lot of people. It seems to be helping me personally when it comes to trying to learn how to regulate better. So the thing that they said was, if you, I don't know if this will work for everybody, but it is something that this lady who was on the video would recommend and suggested that you do, is first thing in the morning is you write down on a piece of paper or a journal or like a notebook, you write down your fears and your resentments. It's pretty simple. Just like, so do your fears first. Just dump down your raw thoughts that are in your brain that are fearful and resentful onto the paper. The purpose of this is to free your mind. So you begin by writing, I have fear. And then list what's in your mind in whatever order. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't have to have particular order or seriousness or intensity. Like the lady says, it can be big fears or it can be little ones. And all fears clutter the mind the same way. And so then she said, after that, is to write down your resents or who you're resentful at. So you say, I'm resentful at, and then you put the name or the institution or whatever, and then you write after that, because I have fear. And then you write why. So fear makes us ineffective in dealing with the problem, whether it is real or not. So you just write down the fears and the resentments, and then you release them and you say, I hereby release these fears. So you can do the second thing that she said to do, and you do this twice a day for 20 minutes, is you do meditation. She calls it Vedic meditation. It is a mantra-based meditation, and it can be done anywhere. So you could be in your car, you could be sitting on your bed, you can be in a comfortable chair, you could be at a like in a restaurant or something, and you sit there and you choose a word that has no meaning or is very neutral. So she was recommending, like, you could use the word release. You could also use the word this, which is for like meaning here and now in the at this moment. There are other words you could use. So basically what you do is you can get some calming music or something, you know, like meditative type music, and you play for 20 minutes. So you sit there nice and comfortable, and you start the music, and then you repeat in your mind that word. So like, for example, for me, I'd be sitting here and I have my eyes closed, and in my mind, like, I'm not speaking the word. In my mind, I would go this, 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 this. And I would do this the entire 20 minutes. Now, the first time that I did it, I remember falling asleep for, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes. And it was probably near the end. Because when the bell went off, I remember waking up, and it was like a refreshing bell, because I was like, oh. So I took some breaths, and I did notice that the feelings were really good. It felt refreshing. I felt calm and I felt relaxed. The purpose of this is to relax yourself. So I've done it since that 6 days now, and I've managed to get through, and I have said the same word. So you repeat that same word over and over. And you know, it's like you're going this, 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 this. You're kind of, it's like I said, you're going this, this, this. And you're saying it at a con, and you're thinking it in your mind. So your inner voice is who's saying it at that moment. So after the 20 minutes, the bell goes off, or you could have your alarm go off. You could have like some music playing on the TV. If you have a smart TV, or you're casting it to the television, you could have your stereo playing. You can play it through your phone with earbuds in your ears. Excuse me. I got some liquid down my throat there. So once you've done that, you do this twice a day. So you do it in the morning, after you've written the fears and the resentments, and then you do it in the evening. So you could do it after work, you can do it just before bed, as long as you try and do it twice a day. And they did say you don't necessarily have to do it for 20 minutes. They did recommend 20 minutes, but they said that you can do half of that or a quarter of that, but you need to build up towards the 20 minutes. It does take some time. It's not like you're going to find yourself feeling a huge recovery or a huge difference in a week. This is something that you have to kind of work on over a longer period of time in order to really experience the improvement. There we go. So, this dysregulation, I just remember sitting here and thinking to myself, if I can find a way to have better awareness of the fact that I'm doing this, that I'd be able to have a much better chance of snapping myself out of this dissociating, or notice that I'm not in a regulated state, and then I either have to pull myself away from the conversation or from what's going on and go into another room and try to calm down and regulate yourself. You know, grounding, you could do the bilateral stimulation, you could just do the deep breathing, the belly breathing, you could do all these things, or you could go for a short walk and get some exercise and get some movement going. Or if you feel comfortable and you feel confident in yourself that you can snap out of this state that you're in that's affecting your ability to be communicating or be aware of what you're doing and what's happening in the moment, then you can stick around. But you've got to be smart about it, especially if you're not used to it or if you're just starting out. You can't try to take advantage or think that it's not that difficult. You've got to accept the reality of your situation. If you can do that, then you have a much better chance of healing and getting better over a long period of time, because if you get triggered easily, there's a better chance, or there's a higher chance, excuse me, that you're going to be in a dysregulated state, and you're either going to dissociate or you're going to act out in a way that is not appropriate, that could be dangerous, that could be regretful, whether it's an emotional reaction, whether it's saying things that you don't make any sense, or you sound like you're just kind of off in space or whatever. These kind of things you have to get better at recognizing, so that eventually you'll be able to find yourself just before it happens, and either you can work your way past it and stay in a proper state of regulation and not get triggered and not become blended with your system, and then you don't dissociate, or like I said, you have to pull yourself away. And if the person that you're with or the group that you're with is understanding of your situation, then you won't feel any shame or feel bad because of the fact that you had to walk away for a few minutes and be separate from your group or your partner. All these things are helpful when it comes to dealing with and trying to overcome dysregulation and avoid, or overcome your triggers and your dysregulation and avoid making things worse. I know that I'm struggling with it. I am working hard at noticing my state of being. I don't always get it right, and sometimes I'm in such a rush or I've got so much going on in my mind that it's really difficult to recognize a lot of what's happening with me. And sometimes my partner has to say it for me, which only is good for so long. Eventually you have to be capable of on your own of noticing the state that you're in and noticing if you're dissociating or if you're getting triggered, and then doing the appropriate and responsible action that you take. Doing nothing about it and trying to fight it or trying to pretend that it's not happening is the last thing and the worst thing you want to do. You want to learn as much as possible to recognize it and understand that you're either triggered and you're in a dysregulated state, or realize and know that you're in a dissociated state. You have to get all these things down, and you have to learn how and recognize the symptoms and the signs that are happening. And the people who are really good at it and have been doing a lot of therapy and a lot of work with their system should be able to recognize these things ahead of it and be able to do the right thing, so that if you notice that you're triggered, you got to speak up and you got to say something to whoever it is you're with. That's the key. If you can do that, and it does take some time and some effort, then you can heal faster and you can get, you know, your CPTSD and your trauma will start to heal at a quicker rate. And it'll also help your self-esteem and your self-confidence, because if you start to notice these things and you start to do these things on a regular basis where you're making the right choices and you're doing the right thing and people don't have to tell you about it or don't have to tell you that you're triggered, you're going to start to feel better about yourself, and that will help increase the speed and the process of your healing. It's really important. Okay, guys, this is today's episode. I have some big news for people who listen to this, the CPTSD episodes of my podcasts. I have a special guest next week. Jenea Barnes, I'm sure you've heard of her. I have talked about her in the past, a number of episodes ago. I went on her show and did a couple episodes and talked about CPTSD. And then I did some work with her as part of an experience to experience what she does. She is going to come on my podcast as a special guest, and she is going to discuss her experiences and what she's gone through and the things she has tried with her own trauma and what happened to her. We're going to schedule for roughly about an hour, and hopefully it'll go well, and it should be very, very educational, very informative for those who are looking for other people's experiences and point of view of CPTSD. If you want to check out her shows, her podcast and her show that she also has is Self-Sabotaging Psychas with Janaya Barnes. She's on Facebook, she's on YouTube. I think she's on YouTube, I'm pretty sure, but she does have a podcast. You can search for it. And it's really interesting, and it's quite helpful. So I definitely check it out ahead of time, and then tune in next Saturday, March 12th, for the episode, as it will be released on Saturday at 11 a.m., like every other episode is. That's going to be really fun to do, and I'm looking forward to the interview. And I can't wait to hear from you guys as to what you think about it. So, reach out on Twitter. My handle, at ADHD and CPTSD. Please go to my website, www.livingwithADHDandCPTSD.ca. Please go and donate. There is a link on the website at ko-fi.com, ko-fi.com. You can help me support my podcasts and my efforts so that I can continue making these podcasts. My Facebook page, of course, Living with ADHD and CPTSD. You can check out my YouTube page. It has some videos on there. I am working on some more. It's just been a bit of a hard time lately. Yeah, come say hi. Give me a shout. I would really love to talk to some people. I'd love to hear people's experiences, whether it's trauma related, whether it's ADHD or even autism. I would love to hear about everything. You know, the more we share and the more we talk about it, the better we are all off in the long run. Okay. All right, everybody. Have a great week, and I shall see you next week. Bye.